Hello, and welcome to the First Impressions edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined by my editor, Nat Newell, after a 34-31 loss to Tennessee that, honestly, if we're talking about first impressions, feels maybe more catastrophic than even it is.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit more down than on the Colts' future than I am at this point, but I don't think I would characterize myself as up about them. So given everything that was on the line to lose the game, you know, really blow the game the way they did is, and it's not the first time this year it's happened. So some of those questions that have been there all along really come into focus at this point.
Right. Baltimore obviously was a game they should have won. This is a game they probably should have won. I mean, they had three chances to win this game at the end.
Yep. Even when they didn't deserve it, really.
because of the fact that they had three chances and couldn't make good on any of those, I almost don't care about the final drive to get in regulation to get them a tie.
Right, right.
I mean, credit to Michael Pittman, but we didn't learn anything there. Michael Pittman, if you don't know by now that Michael Pittman's a number one wide receiver in the NFL, you haven't been watching the Colts. So we didn't learn anything there. And the defensive pass interference, I know there's a tendency to discount those, but they do count.
Right.
It's 42
right.
yards, does count, whatever. The reason it doesn't count to me is that there were three chances to just win the game outright. They get the two-minute drill, the first drive in overtime, which I don't remember very well. I don't remember the third down play very well. And then obviously the interception. Which was just an abomination of a decision from Wentz.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you have to – so much of NFL football these days is stacking up first downs, moving down the field. You look at the most successful teams, that's what they do. Even the Chiefs, who are certainly capable of big plays, that comes out of Mahomes, at least before this year, like I said, stacking up first downs, getting down the field. Now he's got the talent to make the big plays. I mean, is Wentz capable of doing that? I mean, I think that's the question that has to be asked at this point. Is he? And you wrote about this in a story that will be posted Monday morning. Is he capable of taking what's there as opposed to trying to go for the big splash play?
Yeah, I think even more so than just the last three drives. I think that was a question that – if I go back and rewatch it tomorrow, which I will not have time to do because there's a Thursday game and I'll be at the facility earlier than normal tomorrow. But off the top of my head, there were several plays that I thought, why are they going deep there? And a lot of them turned into incompletions. There were some missed chances. Some of it, I think, is that the receivers aren't as good as some of the receivers they're targeting aren't as good as Pittman, essentially, basically just Pittman.
Yeah.
At this
yeah.
point, but also like you just this was a game, and it felt like it from the first drive. If you go back and look at the first drive, they threw it a lot on the first drive, and there was one explosive play, but it was a short throw. There were a lot of short completions on that first drive, stuff that just moved the chains, and the first drive was begging for it. I mean, this one, well, we can get into this play. We never saw what would happen on that drive because of the awful screen call and what happened afterwards. But the pick in overtime, I think this is why it bothers me the most. Jonathan Taylor was wide open.
Yep.
This might be overestimating Taylor, but I think it could have been 20 yards on a check down because there was no one there for maybe 7 to 8 yards behind him. And he's fast. Like you get him moving downhill and at the very least it was a first down. And the other thing is it wasn't just Taylor. Mo Alie-Cox was also open, not quite as open behind him where there was a giant gap of people, but he was also open. And you know, in that situation, I think, if you watch a lot of NFL football, like I do, in those situations, defenses play back. They play back because they don't want to give up the game on one play. They want to force you to drive the length of the field and make the field goal. And in a situation like Wentz was in tonight, where They had something like 6 minutes on the clock still. It was first down. He had no reason to take a shot whatsoever. He had two open checkdowns. Just take it. Take it all the way down the field until you get to the, you know, 25. And if the drive stalls out, the drive stalls out, and Michael Badgley kicks the field goal, and we're having a completely different discussion. And the efficiency has been a problem, but it was a problem throughout this game. They were not – 4.5 yards per attempt for the game.
That's pretty awful.
Is terrible. And they his completion percentage right now sits at 62.2 after this week. Like, he needs to be comfortable just taking a profit. And until we can see him do that, yes, there are good things that can happen because of his arm and because of the mobility and the escapability. But for this offense to be dangerous and for him to be the kind of quarterback that you can count on going forward, he has to be able to just make these plays when you have – This is where defenses are headed. Defenses in the NFL are headed towards forcing you to make the patient check down type play. And we just haven't seen him do enough of it.
Yeah, and in some respects, I don't know if it was the most damning comment that he made in the whole post game. He certainly Wentz took credit, you know, took responsibility for what happened in the game. But he also said, I'm on the last one play, the last interception that you're referencing, I'm sure the check down guy was open. And to me, that, I mean, maybe he's just saying that to, you know, because he wants to take more, you know, responsibility for it. But it also makes you think, is he going through the play in his head? And is he realize, oh, yeah, because all those guys are back there, there's someone open down low, and he just can't process it in the flow of the game. I mean, does he know it and still can't pull the trigger on it.
With him, I'm not sure that I don't know if he's processing it or if he's just so obsessed with taking the big play that he's passing up stuff he should be seeing. It's hard to know what's going on in somebody's brain, but sure. I just feel like there's so many shots taken down the field. I think that's why he holds on to the ball too, is sometimes too long, is because he's trying to get the ball down the field. Yeah, it's great to have all the big stuff, but just, you know, you brought up the Chiefs earlier. You know, like another example would be two examples would be Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Yes, can they throw the ball down the field and make big plays? Yes, they can. But they can also play the game where they just have to dink and dunk you all the way down the field and just get first downs. Wentz has to be able to do that. He especially has to be able to do it in a game like this, in a game of this magnitude where it was clear the Titans were not letting them get deep.
Well, he also has to be able to do it because you can't I mean, can you only win games when you're ahead? And
right.
You know, and you're going to win by two touchdowns at the end. I mean, that's great, but that's in the NFL, you're not going to win, you know, enough of those games to make the playoffs. Now, he made the playoffs, obviously, in Philadelphia multiple times with and without Reich, so I don't know that we should be nailing his coffin shut here, but it's certainly we've seen enough now to have serious concerns in that area.
Well, the problem with Wentz is that If you change the names and it's, you know, Andrew Luck in this situation, he throws two bonehead picks, I don't think the reaction is the same. But that's because he didn't have last season. Wentz has to prove himself this season. And so is it probably unfair to throw out everything he's done so far with the Colts as a quarterback? Yes. But games like this and games they have to have are going to be graded harshly, and it's going to be remembered harshly. And so you just can't have a game like this in a game of this magnitude, especially when you have three chances to win at the end.
Yeah, and if it was the first time this happened, then it'd be one thing. But, you know, it's the second time along with the Ravens game, and we haven't seen one really, unless I'm forgetting one, that he's pulled out. I mean, it was Houston, they blew him out. Miami was a little bit closer, but they effectively blew him out. And then obviously in San Francisco, they needed the big play was what put the game away. So that's great, but you're not going to be leading – Tennessee and Arizona and Buffalo and Tampa Bay.
Right, you know, this game's won on last second.
Right.
Teams make the playoffs on last second drives.
Yeah, you're not leading those games and going into the end zone at the end there. So, that's the big concern. I think you make a good point. Receiver-wise, they're probably not where they need to be. Hilton was back today, but then left with a concussion.
They don't seem to be on the same page deep either.
And then Pascal was shaky today, made a play, but didn't. Doolin had the one big PI, but he was 0-for-4 on targets before that, I believe. I don't know what he ended up at. But and, I mean, that's, you know, they just need more receivers.
Pascal has been kind of shaky all season. I think this is the most inconsistent performance we've seen from Zach Pascal in the last 3 years since he became a bigger part of the offense. I think one of the other people that deserves mention here is Mo Alie-Cox.
I was going to mention that in the tight ends, you know, not developed the way you'd hope.
Mo Alie-Cox can do a lot of great things. He's got some highlight plays this year, but there are too many plays that are 50-50 balls that he doesn't get. And I don't know that that's necessarily, like, I don't know that's necessarily, you know, we're not, I'm not saying here that he's, like, not viable as a tight end in the NFL, but for what people think he is, that he's a star in the making, he's got to make these plays. There was the play that people wanted pass interference on. Okay, granted, maybe the guy gets there a second early, but also Mo Alie-Cox is literally in the NFL because he has a body type that should be able to shield a guy from the ball and go get that ball. And the throw was fine. There was a throw earlier in the season where the ball went to him in the end zone and hit him right in the hands, and he didn't catch it. He has to come down with these catches more often for you to consider him a prime target in this offense and somebody you can rely on all the time. He just hasn't shown it. And so, outside of them developing Michael Pittman, that what they have at wide receiver right now is not doing it. And T.Y., it's tough to watch, but it's like every time he's on the field now, he's having some injury issue. This one is a concussion. He's probably not going to – I would assume – unless he somehow didn't have a concussion, although he didn't come back in the game.
Yeah, and Frank Reich said he had a concussion after the game.
So he's not going to play Thursday because you can't play him on Thursday. He's got five steps to get through.
Right.
Which leaves you where you've been, which is Pittman, Pascal, Doolin. Maybe you probably bring up Kiki Kuti and see where that gets you. But yeah, it's a bad receiving core. But Pittman alone, I think, is better than Wentz has dealt with in Philadelphia in like the last 3 years.
Yeah, he had even less to work with in Philadelphia. And you know,
you have Taylor, who is
a weapon
in the passing game. And like, I mean, I don't know at this point, but the explosive plays, like, just get the ball in his hands, whatever you have to do. You know, he starts the game off with a 37-yard completion, you know. You have other options in the passing game. They have to be more efficient there. I don't want to discount what Wentz has done. I think Wentz, first seven games still happen. Wentz still has played better than most people expected. But for this to be viable long term and for him to be more than just a stopgap as you look for the next guy, you have to he has to erase this stuff, or it has to happen in a game that doesn't matter as much.
Right.
Or he has to be more efficient earlier in the game, so when it does happen at the end of the game, they have a bigger lead. There's just – I get – and we'll get to this, I think, soon. But I know a lot of people are saying, well, they didn't run the ball enough. I agree. They shouldn't be asking him to throw that much. I also agree with that. But if he's going to throw it that much, it's got to be more efficient. It just does.
Well, let's transition to Frank Reich. He also took full responsibility for this loss, which is to his credit. I think, I mean, he said that you don't throw screen passes with your back up against the end zone. I think that's a well-understood concept in the NFL, and certainly was a mistake. But I don't know that was, you know, how much of that's on him and versus how much of it's on Wentz. I mean, it's almost, there's about 150% blame to pass out here, I think.
I think it's a bad play call. I also think Wentz could have ditched it immediately. I think if Phillip Rivers is there, the ball gets ditched immediately and they move on to second down and we don't worry about it at all. Other than to think, oh, that was weird that he called that. I think a larger issue than the screen call is that, and this is a hard thing to think because it probably goes against the analytics. I think all the analytics say you shouldn't run. Well, really, you shouldn't run at all.
analytics say.
but you should run less than you throw. But I think the team that the Colts have here, and I think after the first half of the season, I think that there are times the Colts need to force the run more often. than they have. They end up with 20 carries today, set 51 passes. One of those carries was a Wentz scramble on a pass, so it's really 19-52. And you have Taylor. You have the second leading rusher in the league. He's capable of that. There were two plays that were called back for holding, which is part of how they end up in these passing situations.
And the first one was only a big play because Braden Smith held the defensive player.
Right.
The second one, I think, was a little bit more questionable. And I'm not saying it wasn't a hold, but I don't think it had to be a hold. I mean, that was a little bit more. I think the first one was he doesn't get that run without the hold.
But I'm just thinking about I'm just thinking about the way
valid, certainly.
I'm just thinking about the way the Titans use Henry, and I do think the Titans use Henry too often. And he's hurt. Apparently he's hurt now. So maybe this is when it comes to roost for them.
You let a running back in the NFL run 28 times a game, and he gets hurt.
But the Titans also don't ever just abandon Henry or forget about Henry enough to get into a 51-20 disparity. And whether or not that means giving Nyheim Hines more carries or Taylor more carries, Taylor's not anywhere near 20 carries a game right now. They keep saying that they believe he can do that, but they haven't given it to him yet this season. It feels like.
What, Hines had one carry, two carries today?
Yeah.
I mean,
Mac had one.
And it was all, I mean, so.
16 carries for Taylor, and they had 20 overall. So one for Wentz, one for Hines, and probably two for Mac. It's hard to remember the exact
breakdown.
It's
not like you're spreading out the carries among the running backs.
Right.
Taylor's the guy. He's just, you're still not running the ball enough.
There's going to be times that there was a thing for a while there with Reich, the last 2 years specifically. He ran too much on first down, everybody said. He ran too much on second and long. Well, they're not really doing any of that anymore. And this is the effect you get. You get when you don't do that. If you don't run on first down a lot, sometimes you're going to throw incompletions. And when you throw incompletions, then you're in second and long. And then you can't run the ball because you're in second and long. And then unless you get 8 yards on third and two, well, third and two is still a passing down for a lot of teams. I mean, the Colts, I think, run it more often than most. But, like, if you realize if you start talking about this, even if you, like, say you throw it on first down and you get a three-yard gain, well, second and seven is still second and long. You can't run it.
Right.
And so you get in this spiral where you're just constantly not running the football, and that's how 51 passing attempts happens.
But you get,
and I think this team needs to start just seeing what they have with Taylor a little bit more.
You do get into the same spiral if you run the ball on first down and gain 2 or 3 yards. So I don't – it's tough. You'd have to go back and look at the game as it played out and say, could they have run it here or there? I just wasn't paying attention close enough for that with everything else that we're doing during the game. You know, with the offensive line back intact, did they move back towards some of that? I think that was part of the problem early is that they didn't – I mean, Taylor, his production, I'm not going to speak to whether he was doing his job well or not because I don't know enough about what he's supposed to be doing. His production early in the season was not great.
First two games, it took off after that. Yeah.
So that's why they got away from it to some degree, I think. And that's probably more offensive line. Certainly it's more offensive line related than it is Jonathan Taylor related. So maybe they get back to it now more that Taylor, you know, that the offensive line's intact. You know, we'll see. We'll see.
Well, this was the game to do it. They had a lead. You know, for a lot of the game, they had a lead in the fourth quarter. That's when you normally run the ball. I know that the holding penalties get – like when you get to first and 20, then it's a lot harder to call a run.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Then you're in second and – if you only get 3 yards, it's second and 17.
Even
and
if you get 10 yards, it's second and 10. And
so
you're not in good
so there is a part of this where you can look at it as, well, they were in the two-minute drill twice, and that was a lot of passes, and they also got holding penalties on first down that erased long Taylor runs that started drives. And so they had to throw there, and so that's how it gets out of proportion. But I think over the course of the season, it feels like the why isn't Jonathan Taylor getting more carries has come up over and over again. And the answer is they're going to have to start forcing handoffs more often. They just are. If you want the running game, if you're one of the people out there who wants them to hand the ball to Taylor more, the answer is they're going to have to start forcing it to him in situations that people don't like to see it forced to him. And if it works for Tennessee, usually. Didn't work today, but it usually works for Tennessee.
Well, did it not work for Tennessee? They still won the game.
That's true.
A.J. Brown went nuts. Am I watching this close enough to know? I'm not. But you got to assume the Colts are focusing on Henry and opening things up.
Well, like the first touchdown, second touchdown, whichever touchdown was thrown to Swaim.
The first touchdown drive. EJ
Speed bit up hard on a play action, clearly focused on Henry.
Right.
And they fired the ball over his head to Jeff Swaim for a touchdown. If you can get more of those throws, that'd be great, you know. So I do think they need to run the ball more. You shouldn't put the game on any quarterback's shoulders entirely over and over again, but even more so with a guy like Wentz. This is the same thing they went through with Rivers last year. You can't ask him to do everything. Now, are there games he can play really well? Yeah, and we've gotten those games from Wentz. The Ravens game is a good example. But still, you have an incredible weapon in Jonathan Taylor. Make sure he's involved. And does that mean that you suddenly become a 50-50 or a 55-45 or a 60-40, which doesn't happen in today's NFL anymore?
That doesn't exist.
Unless you're Baltimore. No, I'm not saying that. But 5 carries a game is not that much.
Is this a turning point, reckoning point for Reich in your mind? I mean, these criticisms of him have been out there. I think we've generally been more supportive of Reich than not supportive of Reich in general. Not every time, obviously. But does that start to shift in your mind after a game like this?
So for me, I'm not ready to throw Reich out yet. There's still the work with quarterbacks. The offense has still numerically outside of the Jacoby Brissett year, and even if there's still some positives in there at the running game and some situational play, there's a lot to like about what he's done offensively. I don't care about there's a weird thing going on where it's like, well, he says there's mistakes after every loss. I'm just going to put this out there. You wouldn't care if he didn't. You'd be mad at him if he didn't say there were mistakes. That's not the actual reason that you're mad. Because if he it just doesn't have anything to do with that. If he came out and said, no, I did everything right, it's not like it's going to change the Colts fan base's mind, and they're going to be like,
no, they'd just be complaining that he never took responsibility for anything. Right. So
that has nothing to do with anything. It's a weird thing to be upset about.
Yeah.
This is more about the in-game decisions, and it does feel like there's a ton of in-game decisions that this hinges on. Over and over again. But I don't think that he's as awful a play caller, as awful an offensive mind as seems to be the way it's trending. Does anybody listen to me on that? I don't know.
Well, people judge the results, and that's just life. And is it right? No. I mean, the other thing, and we've talked about this before, if you put a play call in that has a 70% chance of being successful and a 30% chance of being unsuccessful, that doesn't mean it's going to be successful 100% of the time. It's going to be unsuccessful.
And there are valid criticisms. The criticism that he didn't run the ball enough today, I think, is valid.
Yeah.
The screen call that he called himself out on, that's a valid thing. I don't care as much about the 4th-and-3. I don't.
I thought that was silly. I mean, they went for it twice on the first drive.
And got it.
And then they don't get it in that situation. It's easy to say in hindsight, well, of course they should have kicked the field goal. That's 3 points instead of zero. But come on. Were you saying that on the first two, on the first drive? I mean, it's just that you're just playing off the results.
Analytically, they said analytically it was a medium go. To me, I don't know. I don't know what everybody else wants. I want the coaches of the teams that I'm paying attention to go for their throat.
Yep.
And also, I'm not convinced that punting it there, the Titans don't score on that drive.
Right.
I didn't see a whole lot on that drive that made me think that
Well, it would have been a field goal, I think, not a punt, but and you would have had 3 more points.
No. They were like a 50.
Oh, okay.
It was like other 40. It was not a field goal chance.
Okay.
Because I know I said to Greg Doyle, our columnist, I was like, if they don't get this, it's a go for it situation.
Okay.
It was too long. And
Badgley's not a big leg either. You would have had to be.
Well, I don't think you feel comfortable with a guy that you just signed off the street 2 weeks ago,
right,
kicking that a 58 yarder or whatever it was.
Right.
So I don't know. I know people are going to disagree with me. I know there's a lot of people who would rather they just do what NFL coaches have always done. But that one doesn't bother me as much. the running game disparity in some of this, I think, is confusing given what he said he's learned in the past, learned with Rivers last year. I just, like I said, I'm just not ready to. There's good work with the quarterbacks here. This game aside, I mean, Carson Wentz did some bad things, and who knows, maybe it snowballs, and we're not saying this at the end of the season. But based on what I have right now, the quarterback work is significant. I think the way the team plays, I don't feel like there's an issue with him losing the locker room or not being confident in Frank, that kind of thing, which is normally when you start talking about this kind of stuff. So I'm not there. I am generally more of a proponent of continuity than most people.
You keep him a year too long rather than getting rid of him a year too early, I think.
And the reason I'm like that is because I just don't think that changing coaches is successful.
Right. Yeah.
There's not a lot of examples of it. I mean, the most recent is maybe the Eagles.
Yeah.
Well, the Bucks. Tampa Bay changed, went to Bruce Arians, won a Super Bowl with Tom Brady. But again, they went and got Tom Brady.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a difference.
The Eagles, I mean, a lot of the other teams, though, the sustained success, like the ones that, you know, you can say, like, well, the Packers got LaFleur. Yeah, but they had Aaron Rodgers established there.
Their record the year before he got there was not good, but yeah, you still got Aaron Rodgers.
You know. And so, and I think the other thing is just the reason I don't like the idea of not having continuity, and the reason it bothers me is because there's a lot of teams, there's a lot of franchises that it feels like are just constantly churning coaches over and over and over again. And okay, they made the right decision. They fired this guy that they hate. And then the next guy is a guy that is also bad. And then the next guy is also bad. And the next guy is also bad. And then you are the Jaguars?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, if you don't want to say someone as bad as the Jaguars, how about the Giants? Like, look at the Giants. That's a team that 10 years ago everyone was like, oh, what a good organization. They win, whatever. And now they're a laughing stock.
Yeah.
And they just keep changing coaches. They don't know where they have a rudderless ship. Does that mean you don't make a change? No. I mean, if it gets really bad and you feel like you have to, I think I could see myself going there. I'm just not there now. I'm trying to explain more why I would generally lean towards continuity over something else, especially if there's been some track record in the past. You know, they've got two playoffs. There is some track record here. It's not perfect. No, it's not like it's not dominant. But there's more of a track record here, honestly, than there is in San Francisco. They had one lightning year, and they've been garbage every other year. So there's at least some track record.
And then it's probably too early for this, but then you also have what's next in that you almost certainly don't have a first-round pick next year. You're going to have a lot of guys up for, you know, contracts are up, that kind of thing. You know, what can they get much? I mean, was this year a consolidation year? Maybe
well,
not.
Well, there's also
– what's the next step from here next year with what resources you have available?
There's also the big question that's laying out here that – I've talked about on the podcast a couple times, but that you've brought up, that some of our listeners and guest hosts have brought up, was this an evaluation year?
Yeah.
Because it didn't feel like they were going for it with some of the decisions they made, going with young guys at defensive end, not really signing anybody in free agency, just not making the big moves that you would think you'd make as a playoff team to get the proven guys in there. If it's an evaluation year, then I don't think we're talking about that at all, because you're evaluating.
Right. But your evaluation isn't great right now.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
And who are you bringing in? What resources are you using to bringing in? Now that you've evaluated the young defensive linemen and decided, you know, there might not be there yet. How are you bringing in someone who's better?
Right.
I mean, the salary cap space is going to be less next year. I haven't looked too
much. No, it's going to be high.
Is it going to be high?
They're going to have a lot.
Okay, but you don't have the first round draft pick being the biggest thing then. So if you got, but now all of a sudden, do you have to use that salary cap space on free agents, which you've said over and over again you don't really want to do? Rightfully so. I mean, that's not ideal. You want to build from within. So
right,
and they have not I don't want to say they haven't been able to show they've done that. Certainly the offensive line's been built from within. You know, Jonathan Taylor was a great pick. Pittman was a great pick. But it's just they haven't been able to get enough of it yet to be where you want to be. It's not early, but we're still only in the middle of the season kind of thing. I don't want to throw everything out here. I've got a story posted saying their chances of making the playoffs are better than you think.
Your story's wrong.
I'm not sure I believe that. I'm just going based on what 538's numbers were. And it's still not great, 35% or something like that. But anyway, yeah, there is sort of a I want to say they're teetering, but in fact they're right in the middle, and they're not going one way or another, which is probably what you want.
Well, ultimately they're going to end up at the end of this week in like 12th place in the AFC.
Right.
And as much as it's
– their playoff odds are better than that, though.
As much as you want to say it's muddled or whatever, that means there's also a lot of teams that can beat you.
Right.
You know, for that playoff positioning. So – and they already have – one, two, three. Is it three AFC losses or four? Three AFC losses.
Right, which is it's generally the first tiebreaker. You have head-to-head stuff in there,
but the larger thing is, regardless of whatever the playoff odds say, they still have three games against Tampa, Buffalo, and Arizona, which are as close to what passes for dominant teams in the NFL. As there are right now. Well, and so, then,
you know,
and also three teams with good passing attacks, which
they've shown zero ability to stop.
Right.
They're 3-5. I think 538 projects them to finish the year at 8-9. To make the playoffs, you got to be 10-7. Maybe 9-8 makes it this year. I think there is a chance. The 9-8 team could easily make the playoffs this year. But okay, so that means you need a swing. If they've got them down at 8-9, that means they see them going 5-4 the rest of the way. But it means they have to go either 6-3, maybe, or especially 7-2. And like you said, does anyone see them beating one of Buffalo, Tampa, and Arizona? And then on top of that, you've got New England and Las Vegas coming here, which, again, could they win? You know, would they be favored in those games? Probably, I think, by a little. But, you know, that's okay. So they have a 55% chance of winning. And you're talking about having to pull off an upset. Now, hey, they beat Green Bay last year, so I'm not saying they can't do it. But at Buffalo.
Well, they're at the point too now where they need that kind of upset to have any, like, realistic shot at getting into this.
Right, right.
And it's just hard to bet on that when you've seen the pass defense be the way. I mean, the pass defense today, it ended up being better late, but the Titans got back into the game by throwing it. That's the real, I think, misery of this for Colts fans, is the Colts finally stopped Derrick Henry.
Yep, 28 carries, 68 yards.
Arguably his worst game of the year.
In two years, I think.
Right
like
in
that.
There with right in there with the season opener against Arizona. And I think his longest run was like 9 yards. That's remarkable. They did everything they could, and they still end up losing it. And you just let's just put it this way. I get the frustration. I get the frustration when you see them do that. You see them go up 14-0 and still lose the game.
Yeah, and I mean the 14-0. They did it so quick. They almost did it too quick, which is always a silly thing to say about scoring points. You really can't score points when you get the chance to score points. But you know, another thing is that they've had some of these games have. I mean, obviously Baltimore, even the Rams game. It's such narrow margins in the NFL. It's always going to be that way. And that sort of gets us back to Wentz. And is he a guy that can win those narrow, you know, those games? And I assume he's had to have done it in Philadelphia. So is this just – you lose – you know, some people like to say the great teams win the close games. The great teams do win more close games than not great teams. But the reason teams are great is because they blow people out. When you get a close game – obviously, there's luck. You know, if luck is going to play more of a role, little L, not big L. Luck is going to play more of a role because the game's close, and one bad break sends you one way. So, are they 0-3 in close games because they can't pull them out, or are they 0-3 in close games? Because, you know, you're gonna those are 50-50 games, and, you know, it's just come up tails three times in a row.
Well, it's hard to know for – I mean, I thought in Baltimore, I thought they lost a close game because the defense capitulated.
Right.
What's the other one we're classifying as close game?
The Rams game.
The Rams game Jacob Eason played.
Yeah, but do you – after watching today, do you have it? Are you more or less convinced that Wentz might have won that game?
No, well, that's where I was trying to get to, is that today there were I just keep coming back to, there were three drives that a quarterback has to have, and you have to get in scoring position. And against a Titans defense that I'm sorry, it's just not that good.
Yeah,
it's not that good a defense. They can say what they want about the disguises and whatever they do, but it's not a good defense. Statistically, it's not a good defense this year.
The disguises are not fooling anyone but the Colts, if that's the case.
And he couldn't do it. And, you know, if we're talking about the difference now, you know, you can't use the great quarterbacks all the time because Tom Brady threw a pick six in one of these situations today. But, you know, the flip side is, like, if you throw out or Mahomes, who hasn't been able to lift the Chiefs out of their doldrums. But, you know, the flip side of the argument is there's also been Rodgers, who went down and beat the Niners with no time, essentially no time to do it. And, you know, has been good in some of these situations, and I just keep coming back to it. He had three chances. They get three chances to do this and play calling or whatever. If they should have run the ball more, shouldn't have run the ball more. Just make the plays. Just make plays on one drive to get into field goal position. Not obviously, maybe not the first one, because you want a touchdown there.
Right.
But then the defense did just, you know, stone them. I don't think their play calling would have changed all that much, just being down three.
Well, and even the one that they scored a touchdown, you need big plays in that situation. So that played into – if he had thrown – I mean, you're not going to forget the screen interception there. But if you're down a touchdown and he throws an interception, throwing it down the field – then okay,
oh, well,
hey, yeah, that's what he had to do.
Well, yeah,
but
that's
in
the
other
thing.
Cases, he didn't. So
that's the thing. If the interception on the throw to Pittman happens when you're down seven, okay, I understand why you're trying to take chances, but it didn't. It came in a tie game.
Right. When there was no need to take that.
There was
kind
no
of chance.
Need to take that kind of chance, and there was a wide open running back right in front of your face. Or if you want to say he was looking the other way, well, Mo Ali Cox was over on that side of the field too, and he was also open. So a really rough night at Lucas, a really rough day at Lucas Oil. Colts have to bounce back again. This has looked like a gimme on the schedule, and then the Jets come out and
threw for 400 yards. Mike White.
They had 511 yards against the Bengals defense that had been pretty good. They were 5-2. The Bengals were 5-2, and now they're 5-3 because they lost to the Jets. So
and the number one seed in the AFC going into today.
The Jets. The thing about the Jets is, yes, they are bad, and they don't have good players. But their wins this year are over the Titans and the Bengals. So
one team the Colts couldn't beat and proved they couldn't beat, and another team you have no reason to think they could.
So if you play badly against the Jets, you can lose.
Yes. Yeah.
You can absolutely lose if you play badly against the Jets.
Well, I think that'll wrap it up. We'll be right back at it again Thursday. We should announce that we do have a new Colts writer. His name's Nate Atkins, currently at the Lansing State Journal, covering he does a lot of, we call it storytelling. He does bigger stories, primarily on Michigan State, but also does some had been doing some great stories on high school stuff. Had previously worked on the beat with the Bears and the Lions. His first day will actually be a week from Monday, November 8th. We'll be happy to have him step in. I'll be happy to have him step in and be doing these podcasts after games so I can go home earlier. We look forward to having Nate on board in the next week.
Nat made a terrible mistake in that Nate is starting November 8th, and that means that Nat has one more super, super wee hours of the morning First Impressions podcast.
Yes, yeah, it's rough.
On Thursday.
When I was young, staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning was normal. It is not normal once you have children, and it is takes days for me to recover now that I'm old. So I will be in – I will be feeling Thursday night regardless of what happens, probably the way most Colts fans feel about the Colts right now.
Anyway, that's it for this First Impressions edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. Not a lot of happy talk, but I don't think any of you wanted it. We'll be back here on Thursday. I will I will try to get a midweek podcast in, but it may be tough. But we'll be back here on Thursday after the Colts play the Jets.